Hello and welcome back to the Illumination Podcast, the Disney Lorcana Podcast. My name is Max and I am here solo with you this particular week. Sam is not available for recording. That will not deter me from getting you all your episode of Illumination. Appreciate all of the support. Appreciate you listening to this episode. And we are talking about the Azurite Sea metagame. Last episode, we talked over the Emerald Amethyst aggro tempo is probably more correct, deck. This week, we are talking about the meta from a little bit of a higher level. And there are a couple key points that I really wanted to bring up in this episode, talking over the meta. So first and foremost, the metagame. We've done a metagame episode, we have done evolution of a metagame episode, we have done a couple talks on this, so please do go back and listen to those episodes if you have a chance, and you haven't already. If you have, thank you so much. We're in a rock, paper, scissors meta. That means that there is no particular best deck, right? We're not in a tier zero meta, which would mean that there is one deck that is just better than the rest. We saw a tier zero meta more back towards the days of like Rise of the Floodborne when red purple was just dominating everything. Or a little bit later, you could argue that the Bucky decks started out as a very strong tier zero deck. And I wouldn't disagree with you there either. That is not the case for the Azurite Sea meta right now. We're in a very rock, paper, scissors meta. What does that mean? Very simply put, you have aggressive decks, control decks, and mid-range decks. Right now, the aggro decks are beating the control decks, right? You're going to bring a fast deck. A control deck's going to struggle to control the game quick enough to stop an aggressive deck. Control decks are going to beat down on the mid-range decks, and the mid-range decks are going to beat the aggro decks. The mid-range decks are the decks that are able to get fast starts and also have elements to grow a little bit in size and pressure to be able to play a little bit of a longer game. So these you tend to see picking on the smaller creatures, outclassing them very quickly by way of better statted characters and removal, and then they're able to play a longer game with better characters. Control beats them because they have more time to set up and they have the ability to handle all of the better static characters with mass removal, unconditional removal, better synergies, things that control can set up in the late game. So what do those decks look like right now? Give me examples, you say. You didn't say that, but maybe you are. I don't know. If you are, great. I sound really smart. If not, it just sounds like a guy rambling. Either way, the aggro decks that you may be familiar with, kind of the elephant in the room on this one's going to be your Amber Amethyst Hyper Aggro deck. Of course, you're going to have versions we're seeing now of Amber Steel that are much more aggressive dock-style decks that are using these low-end characters to quest aggressively, be able to refill their hands while playing just enough of the steel removal to be able to offset the opponent if they're on a similar game plan. And then you get into stuff like the Emerald Amethyst tempo style decks, which fall more under an aggressive style than a mid-range, I would say personally. And that is kind of the classic aggro decks. We're seeing other ones come through. Amber, Sapphire, Heroes, things like that are making waves. There's no shortage of them. The mid-range decks are going to go a little bit bigger. They're going to go a little bit more interactive. So you're going to have things like Purple Steel, Amber Steel Song. You're going to see your Emerald Steel decks fall into this category. They play a much longer game, right? They're not looking to close the game out super quickly. They do have the ability to either lock a board and a game out. Emerald Steel, I'm looking at you. Or they have an ability to start with very quick style hands. Amber Steel Song very much falls in this direction, right? You can go Daisy Duck into Mr. Smee, into Lawrence, into Pluto, and close out a game without ever actually needing to use a song in some circumstances. And Purple Steel, kind of the new kid on the block, so to speak. We saw Purple Steel starting to gain popularity last set with Pete, Games Referee, being involved. And this is another deck that will commit permanence to the board and then use Pete to lock it out and not allow the opponent to play another action while they've used their good statted purple character to just take them across the finish line. Now on the control side of things, obviously we know some of these characters, right? These are your Sapphire Ruby, your Sapphire Steel, your Amethyst Ruby decks. All of these are your controlling decks. They're decks that are very well suited at playing a long game, and they only get better as the game goes on, right? If you think about it like a line graph in your head, if you start with aggro being at the very high peak and then a line going down to the right. So it's just a downward slope. Controlled X do the opposite, right? Where they start at the bottom, and then as they move right, they go straight up. So it looks like a big X, right? If you compare an aggro deck to a control deck, it's a big X. At what point in the game they're doing better? The controlling decks are obviously destroying everything, drawing cards, playing key critical threats that can win the game 1 to 2 turns in the late game, but they're struggling to hold the game down in the early game, where the aggressive decks come out of the gates hot, but they often fizzle out and are looking to close out with the last few lore they need to end the game towards the very end. So that usually how that goes. Mid-range kind of plays, as opposed to going like an extreme curve, they slowly, nicely slope upwards where they get a little better and then flatline out from there where their threats only get so good. We're talking about Tinkerbell, Giant Fairy. The cards like that, Robin Hood, Champion of Sherwood, we've seen a lot of these cards in this style of deck. So those are kind of what the meta looks like. And again, just to recap that one, the aggressive decks are going to take advantage of the control decks, beating them before they can assert control. The control decks are going to beat down on the mid-range decks, and the mid-range decks beat up on the aggro decks. So what the heck should you play then in this Azurite Steel meta? And I think if anybody is telling you to play a particular deck, they're being a little bit hyperbolic right now. I do not think there's anything close to a good recommendation. And I think in this style of meta, the what should I play question is much more personal. So I would say, what do you like to play? What do you feel you are the best at playing? What style feels the most natural and well suited for you? And I would say to start there. I think from there, you need to break it down. You need to go, okay, what deck? All right, let's ask a better question. In what category that I just went through would you want to play a deck in? What do you feel like you're the best at? Are you a good aggro pilot? You're good at starting off and knowing how you can preserve just enough in the game to be able to finish out a longer game or be able to kind of claw back as all of your characters are banished. You can get them with the last couple gathering knowledge and wisdom. Are you more of a mid-range player? Do you like the flexibility of being able to win quickly with certain hands, but also use the cards to be able to grind out a much longer game plan? Or are you a control player where you want to play a lot of value cards in the early part of the game, as well as pinpoint style removal for fast characters, and then assert a very, very powerful end game plan for those very late turns that just allow you to feel unbeatable? Whatever one of those categories sounds the most attractive to you is the deck you should be looking to play. Then from there, breaking it down to which one of the subcategories, which one of the sub decks do you like to play? Let's break down control for an easy example. Do you want to play a Sapphire Ramp style strategy, or do you prefer to play something that looks more like the Ruby Amethyst decks, where you're using the Madam Mim bounce package in concert with the Merlins as well now as the Genie to be able to generate a lot of card advantage over a game? Which do you prefer to play? Would you prefer to ramp heavily on your ink, or would you prefer to gain a lot of cards in your hand but keep an even keel of ink ability? Depending on what your style is, I personally would lean more towards a Ruby Amethyst control deck because I am not a good Sapphire pilot. So if you ever see me across the table from you and I start playing Sapphire cards, I think you're advantaged because I don't know what the heck I'm doing with those cards. Other people feel differently. Other people in our testing group, very gifted pilots with Sapphire ramp style strategies, while I'm not. And that's okay. There's no right answer right now. I'd be just as happy to sit down across the table from them playing either another controlling deck or an aggressive deck. I'd rather not be playing a mid-range deck, but I do know how to play a mid-range deck against a control deck to try to maximize my win rate. It's all about picking the style you like first and foremost. You need to make sure you test the deck thoroughly. The very first thing you need to know is what are the micro sequencing pieces of the deck that you need to understand the best? What order do you need to play things in? How do you arrange a turn really strongly? There are some really cool things you can do in some of these decks that don't seem obvious. A call out here would be in something like Amber Steel Song, being able to put damage on your own character with a Storm Rage on to then be able to play a Rapunzel and draw two cards so that you can gain card advantage in the matches where you need that to win. Those are non-standard plays that a lot of pilots who have only played the deck a couple times or even a few dozen times won't truly understand. And maybe they understand that it's a thing you can do, but they don't understand when you need to. So those are certain things. The Whole New World decks on themselves are some of the most skill testing in the game, in my opinion. The play design in this game is very elegant, and there's no benefit so strong to playing a Whole New World that it feels unbalanced. It's crazy that they've managed to balance such a powerful effect, which is normally something that you can make asymmetrical very easily, even though you're both drawing seven cards. Me being able to draw seven cards, you losing four and then drawing a new seven is very detrimental because you didn't use as many resources as I did, which means I am ahead in the game most likely. But they've made a lot of headway to not make that card feel as oppressive as it has in other games, i.e. Magic the Gathering, which is why I referred to it as a wheel, because it's named after the card Wheel of Fortune, where both players discard their hands and draw seven cards. So that card is very unbalanced in Magic the Gathering. Typically, if somebody has it in their deck, they're doing something extremely unfair, where Lorcana, we haven't seen that yet, which I think is amazing in terms of the game design. So shout out to the game designers for that, because holy cow, that is an absolute task. And I know early on, that was one of the cards that was most commonly pointed at as one of the most unfair in the game, because you could eke out an advantage certainly in something like an Amber Steel Song or a Sapphire Steel, but it was hard to really leverage the advantage as hard as you can in a game like Magic the Gathering. But you got to practice. You have to know how. You have to know when you're using your wheels. You have to know when your wheels are useless and they need to be fishbone quilled away. Those things you only learn in time, in testing against multiple different decks. So just be aware, the practice is everything. So one of the big reasons I wanted to talk about this subject, even though it like butts up adjacent to some of the previous episodes we've had, is A, Azurite is still a very unknown meta. So there's a lot of deck choices. And I want to say this, if there's nothing else, this is the thesis statement for the episode that I wrote down. Experience is worth more than finding the best deck or the best deck of the week. There's so much more value right now in picking a deck you are good at playing and well-versed at playing and understand the sequencing of very well, because not only do you play the deck at an optimal way, you're making it the most efficient and best possible choices with the deck, you are also focusing on your game plan through the lens of what the opponent is doing. That makes you much more dangerous than stumbling and trying as hard as you can to operate the deck adeptly and ignoring the opponent. Because there are going to be times you need to abandon the most obvious line, where it's going to be, hey, most of the time shooting their character with a Let the Storm Rage on is going to be the right choice. There's going to be one time in 50 where shooting your own character with Let the Storm Rage on is correct. But there are going to be those times, and knowing when to pick up on that is going to win you a game you might not otherwise have won. So that's why I say experience here is so much more important. Are there going to be bad matchups? Yes, of course. It's a rock, paper, scissors meta. Your deck is not going to just steamroll everybody, or else everybody will be playing the deck that steamrolls everybody and figuring out the cards you need to change to steamroll that deck. That's a tier zero meta, not what we are in right now. So experience and knowing a deck, even if you feel like that deck is not as good as some of the other deck choices, perhaps, that experience and that ability you have to play that deck so well and not think so much about what you're doing, but what your opponent's doing, will give you wins that other players of that deck might not be able to get, or other players who are chasing the best deck might not be able to get. So I can't emphasize that point enough. Your skill will give you a higher win percentage in this kind of a meta than just trying to find whatever deck did well at the last big tournament and playing it. Somebody seeing right now that Amber Steel Song is doing really well might want to play Amber Steel Song. It is one of the most skill-intensive decks in the game. As is the Sapphire Steel decks. The Whole New World decks are some of the most skill taxing decks in Lorcana. Knowing how to play them well is an art, and it is not easy. It takes a lot and a lot of time. The true 10,000 hours, right, of practice to get there. That is important. Having the skill to play that deck is awesome. Just picking it up and trying to win because you saw that people have been winning with it lately, you're going to look at that deck and it's going to bewilder you. Sam, myself, and our friend Hyper Hippo from the podcast previous, Cliff, are on a 3-person team coming up at the PAX Unplugged Lorcana events that they're being held by Pastime Games. And we have to represent the 6 ink colors across the team. I am playing Amber Steele because after we arranged everything together, felt like that was probably the best combination and layout, and I have the most experience playing that color combination, so I am the one playing it. Could we have had any of us play it? Of course. I could have played a deck I wanted to play more and left somebody else playing the Amber Steele deck, but why would I do that when I think that that deck's really well situated? I think the other deck choices we made are really strong, and I think that Sam and Cliff are better at those decks than I am. So we're taking the decks going, what did we evaluate the best breakdown of the colors to be? It would be these three decks. And then we decided who was going to play each deck based on their prior experiences. There's no way I'd be able to play that Ruby Sapphire deck very adeptly. As I pointed out, I'm miserable a lot of the times with the Sapphire decks. I don't enjoy the play patterns, so I haven't play tested them a lot. I have in the past, but not enough to where I'd consider taking it to a tournament. But I have played Amber Steel in many different iterations, many different times, so I understand it. And even getting back into it now with little additions to Amber Steel, which got probably some of the very fewest cards in Azurite Sea right now, like Pluto basically being like one of the only cards that you got. In some cases, I'm still here, maybe. Perhaps if you're into the Simba stuff, you got the Shift Simba now. But there's not many options, and no one's quite sure what the right configuration really looks like for the deck. But I'm learning the little play patterns. I'm learning the power and like the sequencing to optimize my Plutos, things like that. I'm learning my role in each matchup. I'm learning the optimal keep on the draw versus the optimal keep on the play. All those little baby things are super duper important. So I can't point out enough, experience is king in this kind of a meta. Play the deck you like, even if you think that deck is not as good as another deck you could be playing. If you have hundreds of games under your belt with it, you're probably honestly going to do better in a tournament setting than you would playing the deck that, quote, finished a little better the past couple of weeks. Saying all of that, of course, everybody's eyes are going to be very acutely affixed on the Continentals in EU. That's really going to be our first big layout of the metagame, right? We're getting this at the holidays before store champs. This is going to define the top eight decks here, or even the day two decks, the top big decks are really going to be what people start playing and play testing to beat, even if they stick with their decks that they're experienced with. These are the things they're going to have somebody, a buddy, sit across the table from them and try to play against. It's going to really define what the metagame's starting to shape up to be. So if anybody's got any cool tech, it's going to come up at one of the biggest stages in Lorcana history, the biggest to this point in Lorcana history for sure. So I think that that's really, really important to make sure you're watching that, but don't lean too hard. Look at the other things that are happening around those top eight decks, around those day two decks. What else is in that meta? The European meta and the North American metas look distinctly different at any given time. So it is definitely worth keeping an eye on it, but don't fully invest. See what other decks are out there. Look at all of the day two decks. Look at the data carefully as you evaluate the metagame. And I recommend you evaluate the metagame. Take some time and look at it and try to figure out how things look and how things are going to shape up if you want to get a leg up, if you want to make a couple alterations, or you want to try a brand new deck completely. There's no wrong answer, but just know, as of right now, as of time of recording here, and as we approach the EU Continentals, there's no right choice, which means that your experience is everything. And in order to win a game of Lorcana that way, you have to keep questing.